Didn't Morris Day have a guy with a mirror?
Morris Day in the Time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet you he had, I think he had a guy who like would just, yeah, the guy who grabs the jacket, you know, and holds it up just to make sure he looks good. I'm going to do, if I was rich, that's what I do every morning.
Just have a guy with a mirror.
Your visage, Mr. Wadman.
Okay, so it is Tuesday.
Yep.
Tuesday, the, what is it? The 10th of February,
that's
for those of you keeping track. Although it could be the 11th if you are in other parts of the world.
Aussies.
Could it be the 9th? Or is it? Are they only ahead?
No, because 10 hours, I think the dateline, it might just be midnight there.
All right, so it's either the 9th or the 10th or the 11th, wherever you are. And the sad trombone tells us that it is on Taking Pictures. Yes, we are the sad trombone in your photographic life.
Who are you again?
That's another shirt for Justin Weathersby. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from Faded and Blurred, and with me is now you. Well, see, you're not snowed in, so you're just
slushy.
Slushy Bill Wadman.
It's all too true.
And you're all indignant about it. Slushy.
Well, it's not nice out. It's just slushy. You know, this is the part of the winter for those of us who have winters where you're just kind of like, yeah, I'm over it. Middle of February. It's not, over.
Who just got 5 feet? You were telling, was it
Boston has five feet of snow in
over,
the last 3 weeks.
Period.
Two and a half weeks.
Wow.
Apparently they have so much snow because it stayed below freezing. So the snow is not going anywhere that they actually, there's video you can see of earth mover kind of things, like big giant bucket loaders.
Yeah.
Pouring snow into flamethrower. They have these like, it looks like a train car that has flamethrowers inside. So you dump stuff in the top and then out of the bottom comes water.
They should filter it. And then
turn it into some kind of fancy water that they sell to like people in Palm Springs.
Snow bottle from Boston, something.
Yeah. Anyway, so they've got a lot of snow up there to the point where roofs are collapsing. They have nowhere to put the snow. Like, it's bad.
What about the river?
Well, funny enough, you should say that. Apparently, that's always been a no-no because if they put too much snow in the river, it turns into ice and then the ships and whatever. But apparently, they're getting to the point where they may have to do that.
Wow.
Interesting stuff.
I can't even fathom that. I mean, we've talked about this before. Snow is something that we have to drive to.
Yeah, snow is something that falls on our heads. But at least we have water. Suck it. So
they should send it to us.
Do you have a slogan? What's the slogan?
I got nothing.
So how's the listener survey going? How many people? You need more people?
We need more people. We're going to keep it up for one more week. The response has been terrific, and we're learning all sorts of interesting stuff. Yeah. And in fact,
strangely, half of them have been filled out by Alan Bailward, but...
let's see. Okay. Do I want to give you a little
I'm going to No, give don't give us a taste. I want to hear it all at the end. I don't want to know.
Do you?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No? Right. Don't give me anything.
All right. I give you nothing.
All right. So go check it out. We're going to put a link in the show notes.
Yes. Please. If you have not taken it, it's 2 minutes. It doesn't hurt. Let's see.
5x5.tv/OTP/146. That's episode 146. And it'll be the first link in the show notes.
Right. If you're in the Google Plus group, it's pinned to the top.
You couldn't have missed it over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. So this will be the last one and then it'll be gone and we'll
and then we're going to discuss. This will be fun.
We will discuss.
It's like getting graded. I feel like.
No.
Are grades coming in?
That's right.
Are we getting our report card?
You're going to be in detention, mister.
Yeah. I'm going to be suspended.
I'm going to have you stay after class.
All right, so one more week on that. Okay, so let's go deep.
Let's go deep because We need to.
All right, tell me, I don't know where this is going to go,
but some interesting stuff. Okay, the humans of New York, and I'm not going to get into
whether we've had this discussion before. We've talked about how.
But something really kind of wonderful happened, and that is that Brandon, right?
I don't actually know, but sure.
I think that's his name. Anyway, Brandon shot a photo of a kid. In Harlem, wasn't it?
Could be. Yep.
And so the story was, he asked who this kid's biggest influence was, and he says his principal, and his principal's name is Nadia Lopez. And what is he goes to Mott Hall Bridges Academy Middle School.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
And
this kid,
so,
how cute is he?
Yeah, definitely. And so there's this level of respect that the principal bestows on her students. They don't call them students. She doesn't call them students. She refers to them as scholars. And
I like that stuff.
It's kind of neat, right?
Yeah.
And really cares about what's happening and what they're doing and what they want to do and wants to encourage them to go to college. And you know, many of these kids, they'll be the first people in their families to go to college.
Yep.
So the story goes that the principal, Nadia Lopez, has a plan for her middle schoolers. At the beginning of every year, she wants to accompany the incoming sixth grade class on a tour of Harvard.
Okay.
Since many of her scholars have never left New York, she wants them to know what it feels like to stand on the campus of one of the world's top schools and know that they belong. She thinks the experience will broaden their horizons and expand their idea of their own potential. So Brandon takes a picture of her and does this Indiegogo campaign to raise.
So the Humans in New York guys started the Indiegogo campaign?
Yes. Yes. Okay. To raise money to help send these students to a tour of Harvard. All right. And I think the original goal was, I want to say $30,000 is what they wanted to raise.
Right.
Well, fast forward 6 weeks or so.
Yeah. What are we currently at?
We're currently at
$1.39 million.
Yeah. Almost $1.4 million. So
$100,000 was the goal.
Yeah, $100,000. Right, my mistake. So what they have done with this photograph or a photography project, if you will, is they've secured trips to Harvard for the entire school for the next decade.
Yep.
They have established a scholarship fund to send kids to college.
Yep.
And it just. Politics aside and whether or not they're, you know, I just think it's amazing that arguably this one person changed the world of these kids.
Yeah.
Changed so much about what they can expect from their lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that this is not that much different than, say, 30 years ago if, you know, NBC News did an article about, you know, did a segment about a kid in a similar situation, it would raise money too. It's just now we can do it without a huge corporate industrial thing in the middle.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, in a way, yeah. Yeah. And you know, the kid ends up getting to meet the president and there's photographs of them in the Oval Office and, you know, Brandon shoots I want to make sure that's the right name. Anyway, shoots the president. And I thought it was great that he asked Obama basically the same kinds of questions that he asks anybody else.
Right.
And we get these, you know, what seem to be very honest answers. We've got pictures of his family, not the president's family, Vidal, the boy that he shot.
Right.
We've got pictures of his family and the school and the students. And it's just, we sometimes forget that we get caught up in our own work. And I'm just as guilty of it as anyone else's. Yep. I want to get my work out there. I want to get my name out there. I want to get my stuff out there, whatever it is. But there is another thing that can happen when things like this take place.
Right.
And did it change the world at large? No.
Yeah.
Did it change the world for this group of people? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, and my only I think this is all fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The only part of this that just kind of upsets me, this is very similar. There was another story, and I'll find the link and put in the show notes, of a guy in the last week who sort of became internet famous for he was walking to his job. It took him 4 hours to get to his job every day and 4 hours to get back. So he was getting home at 2 o'clock in the morning, waking up at 6, and then traveling all the way to his job to do the job to then come back. So he was traveling for like 6 or 8 hours a day or some ridiculous thing, because he had to walk most of the way. And he was making whatever, $10 an hour at his job. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of these like just horror stories of capitalism. And somebody put up a thing like, hey, let's raise some money to buy this guy a car. And it raised, instead of raising the $5,000 to buy the guy a used car, it raised $160,000 or whatever it was. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they bought the guy a Ford Taurus or something. And now he has a thing. I don't know what they're gonna do with the rest of the money. I forget. But the point is, the only problem I have with this is that, yeah, these kids deserve to be able to go check out Harvard. This guy deserves to be able to afford a car to get to his job where he's working minimum wage, essentially. My only problem with it is that these two people get noticed because they had the picture taken of them, which I understand is exactly your point. It just makes me sad because there are hundreds of thousands of people out there just like these guys who don't get noticed because they don't get the picture taken of them, you know, and we as society, we see a picture of somebody looking sad or needy or whatever, and we feel empathy for them that we don't feel if we don't have the picture, you know, and it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's the same thing with in war zones. You know what I mean? Like, we don't care about the people who are getting killed until you see the picture of, you know, a mother and baby dead in rubble or whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever terrible thing comes across the wire.
Sure. But it's, I mean, you have to start somewhere.
No, you absolutely do. I wish that people, you know, could do this stuff without, you know what I mean?
But how do you know about it unless there was the photo? I would never have known about Vidal or his family.
No, yeah, sure. But at the same time, it's, you know, everyone complains that taxes are too high because, you know, like we can't pay for education for every kid because
it costs, if you're in the middle class or the poor, they are.
Right. Yeah.
But that's another story.
Right. But it's just, you know, it's like there are things that we should be doing in society that we're not doing, in my opinion. Whatever.
There are things
like this that are really great. I just wish it could happen to more people, I guess is what I'm saying. The problem is, of course, if you took pictures of everyone who needed it, then the world's just flooded with all of those people, and then none of them would ever get the stuff because it would just be a flood of people, you know?
Sure.
It's actually an interesting sort of sociological experiment in people can take small chunks of, I need your attention and your empathy and your time. But like, if you overwhelm them, they're just like, this is too much for me, you know?
Right.
It's like kind of fascinating, but like, no. I'm proud of Brandon for doing something with his fame, in his success that is like, you know, now we're going to start changing stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now that we have this audience and this thing, that's great. Like, I'm all for the activism.
Do you think he has a responsibility to now put that, I mean,
yeah, you know, I was going to say that.
Was this the end game of his fame, do you think?
I mean, we'd have to ask him, I guess. But I think that he now has an audience and he probably is thinking, what can I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? The other question you asked, which is like, is he obligated to do this now that he is known? Well, I mean, that's a bigger question. Does art have an obligation to society?
And if so, what?
Yeah.
Is it awareness? Is it financial contribution? Is it on the ground help?
Yeah, I don't know. This guy in this particular instance has an opportunity to make people notice things they wouldn't otherwise notice. Great. Yeah. But if he didn't do that, would people say, what are you doing with your fame? big deal. Some middle-class person is sitting outside drinking coffee, talking about their student loans or whatever it is. Right. You should be using this for good. I don't know what that answer is. That's a tough one.
As a personal question, let me put you on the spot for a second.
Sure.
You've been skeptical. Let's go that way.
Yeah.
Of his intentions. Does this take you into any one direction or another? Does this give him any more juice to you?
In my own head, I'm still not interested in the project. Like, you know, I look at it and I just go, okay, you know, I guess.
Is it the subject matter or is it the execution?
I think a portrait and a little to me, when I look at Humans of New York, the picture to me feels like a very secondary thing. Like, oh, I talked to Jeffrey. Here's his answer. Oh, by the way, I snapped a picture just so you could put a face to the quote. You know what I mean?
And what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't necessarily really see him as a photographer. I wouldn't label him as a photographer first. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's taking a picture in the same way the DMV takes a picture. Like, most of those pictures, I don't think are particularly good portraits of anybody. They're interesting because of the stuff that's said underneath them, you know, which is fine. But in some ways, he's more of a, I don't know what, I guess the problem is that we don't have a good noun for what he is, you know, that encompasses what he's doing. Because I don't think it's a photographer, and I don't think it's a interviewer. You know what I mean? Like, what is it? I don't know. But overall, you know, is he, I mean, look, ultimately we are all self-serving in some way, right? You know, yes, you and I are recording this show, but like, it's not like we record this show just to talk to each other and then stick it on a shelf. We stick it out there so other people can listen to it and enjoy it. And you know, maybe we make $2 or $3 from an ad every once in a while, but it's not, you know what I mean? Like, we're ultimately doing this for us as much as we're doing it for other people. Right. And you know, you could argue, well, you know, Obama gets a good PR boost by meeting this kid. You know what I mean? Like, who knows, right? What was going on in it? I'm not going to judge their intentions. Overall, though, I think that it's good that he's doing something with it. Although I do fear that if he tries to do this all the time, people are going to get weary of it at some point, you know, just be like, oh great, that Brandon guy is doing another Indiegogo for another, you know, I don't think the next one would be as successful as this one. I may be wrong, you know, but I think that if he does one of these a month or one of these a week, eventually it won't get the press that this one got.
Sure.
You know, I think this is sort of like, this is the really good, really empathetic version of I want to make potato salad, you know, where it's like, wow. Oh, look at this guy came up with this idea. No, that's not
a little
rip.
Scathing.
Well, no, it's not. I don't mean it to be, I guess what I'm saying. I think it's great, but I think that part of what has gotten so much buzz about it is the fact that it's the first one he's done and it's a good idea and it's a worthy cause. But I think if you did one of these a week, I don't think it would be at the top of every single list on Facebook and Twitter and BuzzFeed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just a reality of the world. It's like, oh, we've seen that already. Show us something new. You know, but getting off of him and onto reality of a photograph of that kid. The question is it the photograph of that kid or the story of that kid that made people want to give and made him ended up meeting Obama? Right. If all he had was the quote and not the picture, do you think the same thing would happen or vice versa? Or did it have to be the photograph and the kid saying that the principal was his hero, et cetera, that sets it off?
I think this is an example of where context really came to the aid of the photograph.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like this is what this format is good for. Right. Communicating a person and what they're like, you know, creating a connection between the viewer and the photograph and then getting a thing underneath it. This is what this is made for. Right.
Sure. Yeah. I'm I still want, I mean, there's a bigger discussion here about what makes a good portrait, you know, and why are these bad portraits?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not bad. They're not bad in the sense that, like, oh, it's crap. But, like, I look at them and I wouldn't take away all the words and just put these pictures up on a thing. I don't think they're particularly interesting photographs. Personally, I mean, other people disagree with me, but, like, I don't, you know, take away all the thing and just put the pictures up. I don't think you would look at them twice if they didn't have the words underneath them.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
There are a couple that I think are terrific character studies, more than a couple, actually.
Okay. I just, they feel very ordinary to me, but that's fine. You know? But I don't think he would be where he is if not for the questions, is my point.
For the context.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, he's been accused of the questions being softball and soundbitey and,
well, they are
pithy and,
but they need them to be, because they need to be two sentences, you know. They're not going to have a 20-minute conversation like we're having about it, you know.
Right.
But that's okay. You know, that, I mean, look, you can attack people for anything. Let's say he went out there and he was doing tintypes with a single light and whatever, you know, who knows? He's shooting with a 20x24 Polaroid camera on the street with some big lights, and he takes these beautiful, you know, softbox lit portraits, you know, that look like Greenfield Sanders or something like that. And then he had the questions underneath them. People would say, oh, well, the portraits are great, but they were taken out of context of these people's real lives. I mean, you could find, you know,
here's something to think about. Why are these candids or snapshots, but the Chuck Close 20x24 Polaroids of actors without makeup, that's art?
Because he's Chuck Close. Sorry. Yeah.
I mean, is that really so just because?
Well, you know, well, why is a scribble on a napkin worth something when Picasso made it versus when I make it? You know? I mean, that's the deeper question of art, and who knows what the hell the answer to that is. But I will say that, I mean, you had a couple other links in here of, for example, this Guardian article about the Elliot Erwitt photo of Jackie Kennedy at JFK's funeral, right?
Right.
And, you know, people say, look at this look on this woman's face, you know, that this photograph communicates anguish in a way that writing about it never could.
But, you know what I mean? There again, do you and I relate to that in a similar way because we've lost one or both of our parents and we've seen that look?
If you haven't
experienced a sense of loss, this photo might mean nothing to you.
Yeah. Or to be even more pointed, if this wasn't Jackie O, it was just some mother of or wife of some guy who died in war, or just died and happened to have been a military guy and the woman really missed it. Like, does it mean more because it was the first lady?
You know what I mean?
Okay. He's some soldier who later in his life died from a car accident, but he has a full, you know, military service.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, are we reading into it because we know the story of JFK and his assassination and blah, 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 blah? You know, would Robert Kennedy on the right just be some weird guy who's cutting into the frame?
Right.
But we put meaning on
this.
It's all true.
And I think all of this speaks to our insatiable thirst or hunger or appetite for story, for meaning, for context.
Yeah. Well, I think that there is a, in the same way that we as humans find patterns in clouds, you know,
right?
Like, we are pattern recognition machines.
Right.
We are also emotional machines, you know? And so I think that what happens is, you know, we end up with seeing things that may or may not be there. I mean, we've discussed this before. Like, does this portrait of so-and-so really communicate who they are? Well, who knows? You know, I don't know. I've never met the guy, you know, it looks like a cool portrait, and it looks like I think that he probably is like that, but who knows? Maybe he got him on a bad day or a good day or whatever. You know, we have no idea. And can a single image ever encompass? You know, you could take the picture of that Karsh took, or what's his name, of Churchill and all that stuff, and it's like, well, is that Churchill, or is that the Churchill wanted you to see, or whatever, you know?
Okay, so how do you reconcile
that as a
portrait photographer? Because have said that you want to make the iconic portrait of someone.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So how do you reconcile that? Well, maybe
I realize that the ultimate goal that I have is an illusion.
Right. Okay. I don't know that we've admitted that before. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the sense that there's no way I can ever prove it. Right.
Sure.
I could take a picture of you and I could think, oh yeah, I really got Jeffrey there. Right. Whether I did or not.
Yikes.
I needed to get a new camera anyway. But I could think that I got it, you know, in the same way that, you know, when you paint a painting or write something, you could say, you write a sentence and it's really perfect and you go, oh, I nailed it on that one. Well, did you really nail it? Couldn't have been better. Well, I'm sure it could have been better. Or, sure. You know what I mean? Like this is, we're all, it's all gray. Right. Everything we do is gray. Everything we're discussing is gray. You know, I mean, you and I can sit here for 200 hours and discuss all this stuff, but there are no answers to any of the questions we're asking. Ultimately, there's certainly no answer.
You know, I think that's closer to the truth. There may be no right answers.
You know,
there
are. OK, the guy in this article, this Guardian thing about with the Jackie O picture, he links to Picasso's Weeping Woman at the Tate. You know, this painting?
Yep.
OK. And then he also links to the pictures that Warhol made that are from somebody else's photographs from that day or whatever it is. And it's
the screen prints. Yeah.
Yeah. The screen print stuff. And he says, oh, look how much more powerful, you know, this Elliot Erwitt picture is than the screen printed stuff that Warhol did, you know, or arguably even Picasso's Weeping Woman. Well, I don't know that I agree with that. Like I definitely don't think that the Warhol stuff is as good, but Picasso stuff I think might be better than this photograph, you know, and somebody else might disagree with both of us and say that the Warhol thing is what hit them the most.
Right.
You know, like this guy's stating opinion, but he's kind of stating it as fact, you know? It's very difficult what connects with somebody. And how one image, I mean, this whole thing is about how photographs could be more powerful than art, be more powerful than painting, be more powerful than Warhol screen printing. There are photographs that mean a lot to me, but there are paintings that I personally see as much deeper than most of the photographs that I've ever seen. And if you had to take me down to my top three pieces of art, I don't know that any of them would be photographs.
I would agree with that. Yeah. The top, if I could only have three pieces of visual art to surround myself with for the rest of my life, I don't know that a photograph would be in there.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yes, photographs can be powerful, but so can paintings, so can sculpture, so can books, so can, you know what I mean? Like I don't necessarily put photography on a pedestal that a lot of photographers seem to put photography.
Does photography beg for more context than painting?
I think that photography has the illusion of more context than painting. It has the potential for more context because it is an image of something that was real in front of the lens.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that there is truth in it in a way that we don't have to with painting, you know? It's sort of like, reading a police report that may or may not be accurate to exactly what happened. Well, the police wrote it down and it's all very A to B, you know, through the story. This makes perfect sense. Well, that doesn't mean that that's what it really is. So in the same way, when you look at a photograph, you think, well, here she is standing in front of this guy. So it must mean that she looks like she's crying. So she must be crying. Well, maybe she wasn't crying at the moment. You know what I mean? Like maybe the sun was in her eye or something. You know what I mean? Like we have no idea. We make assumptions because it looks like reality and we think analyze reality.
I think that's kind of what I'm getting to. If we're standing in front of a painting, are we more likely to take painting or even sculpture for that matter at face value, whereas photography, we want more context. We want the story behind it because it's on one hand more literal because it's in front of the lens, but yeah. Again, it happens in an instant and we don't know.
Right. It's false literalism, you know, it's sort of like superficial literalism, you know?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that context can, it's like, okay, write a couple sentences like Humans in New York or any number of similar kinds of things, right? Write a caption underneath it that can give me some context that changes the way that I see the photograph, right? And well, you can do that in a way that I guess but look, you could read the label of a painting and get more context from it. Why is it different?
See, and this is what I wrestle with. I mean, look at, and I'm sure you've seen this, The Sartorialist.
Yes. Right. Yep.
Arguably very similar photos, shooting style to Brandon in Humans of New York. Yeah.
I think.
Would you grant that?
Yes, but I think Sartorialist photos are better.
Okay. But point being is they are at the core sort of this man on the street. Hey, yep. Can you stop and let me take your photo for a second?
Yes.
Whether or not Jesus,
go ahead.
What's his name?
The Sartorialist guy or Brandon?
Yeah.
Who is this guy? Scott Schumann.
Scott. Ugh. Keep forgetting his name. Anyway, whether or not Scott's got more photographic skill, that's right. Not what I'm at. But the point is, The Sartorialist, which is a terrific site, it's a great collection of photographs, but they're presented without any context whatsoever.
Well, because these
than
are about
maybe
fashion.
A location.
It's design, but these pictures are all about fashion. That's his angle, right?
Sure, but
does,
would they
doesn't
take
need
on
commentary?
But if they did have commentary. Would they take on a different meaning?
Well, they could take on a meaning probably beyond the fashion, but I think if you made comments about the fashion, it may actually take away from the photographs because fashion is as much about the mystery of what's going on than it is the reality, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
he gets some crazy looking people. There's some good looking people in Milan and Paris. People dress serious over there, man. You ever want to dress like that?
No, I can't pull that off. Come on.
Yeah, me either.
I wish I could, but
I guess what I'm saying is that it's yes, a photograph can be powerful. Yes, it can be powerful with or without commentary. Can it be closer to quote the truth unquote? If you give more information and you write commentary and make a documentary about the person and, you know, have his birth and death records in there. Well, sure. Does that make it a better picture? Sometimes not, you know,
but even then you're still at the whim of
the person writing the story,
writing the commentary.
Right,
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in many ways, even the person's answers to the Humans in New York are themselves art that needs to be analyzed, you know? Like, again, it's nothing but gray in the sense that there's no black and white.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And you know, that's why people like you and me get off on talking about this stuff for half an hour. But ultimately, there is no answer and everyone's going to have different opinions and that's fine. You know,
right.
You know, I don't particularly like this guy's work, but millions of people do. So who the hell am I? Right. Well, millions, you know, and I'm sure there's things that I like that millions of other people like that a few people don't like and, you know, whatever. That's the way of the world.
If you took away the photographs, would the answers mean more to you? Are you tainted by your opinion or your reaction to the photographic work rather than the narrative work?
I am fascinated by other people, but I'm not fascinated. I'm not fascinated by other people in a third party form. If I'm having a conversation with people and we get to talking about this, but I'm not enough of a voyeur to go read what's going on in other people's heads every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I it's like, you know, that feels like a soap opera to me. Like, of course there's crazy things going on in everyone's lives around us that we don't understand. Yes. That's a given, you know, what is the thing? Like everyone, you know, be kind because everyone around you is carrying a weight you can't imagine.
I've never heard that, but it sounds true.
Yeah. It's like, you have no idea what's going on in you, you know, what's going on in my head right now. What's going on in your head right now that the listeners don't know, or I don't even know, or you don't know, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fact. So in some ways it's like there, I think that there is a voyeuristic piece of things like Humans in New York that just doesn't interest me, but obviously is very interesting to a lot of people, you know?
I am absolutely fascinated by it.
Right. I'm fascinated by talking to people. I talk to people all the time. I want to hear their story, but mm-hmm. I'd rather have a conversation with 15 minutes than read a 2-sentence soundbite. Like, I don't need somebody to go do it for me. You know
agreed.
What I mean? Like, I'd rather live out in the world.
Yeah, I would much rather have the conversation, but I'm fascinated and inspired by other people that do. Yeah.
I think that part of it is that it could be that I'm around a lot of people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, just even going about my day, walking around, going to the store, whatever it is. Like, you know, I see people who look like these people all the time. In some ways, maybe the Sartori list is more interesting because it's like, oh, look at, he's in Paris, he's in Milan. Like, these are people I don't see all day long, but I see New Yorkers all day long.
See, and that's another point is, are these better, in quote, photographs to you because the subjects may look more interesting or maybe look more exotic to what you're used to?
Maybe, you know. Yeah, like this is my world, you know.
The humans in New York stuff.
Yeah, like, you know. I could take 50 pictures that look exactly like this in 10 minutes if I go outside and go up to 7th Avenue and stand there for a minute and talk to people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, does it, I don't know. It's just interesting. We should probably talk about our sponsor today. You done with this conversation or you want to go a little further?
We're not done with it. We'll come back to it.
You want to keep, will you come back today? Or, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, it's like,
we'll come back
keep
in hour 427. Join us, kids, when we continue on. Yeah. We got a new one, right?
We do. Skill Feed.
Skill Feed.
Yeah. You know, it's from the makers of Shutterstock.
Skillfeed.com. Skill Feed. Now, see, I got to give them their own.
So we got to wait?
Wait. I'm going to put a little stank on it. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Skill Feed.
Nice. All right. Here we go. All right, Jeffrey, what is Skill Feed? Skill Feed is an online marketplace for educational content. They've got an all-you-can-learn platform, supports multidisciplinary, man, that's a hell of a word, multidisciplinary skill learning and sharing with a monthly subscription. So you pay a monthly subscription and you can share skills with other people on the network. They got fresh videos that offer either
fresh. See?
Skill
Feed.
Their fresh video tutorials offer either a cursory glance or an in-depth look at a variety of topics. They hand-select contributors that include passionate industry professionals and experts from around the world. So they've got all kinds of content, instructional videos that help you hone your skills, advance your career, or embark on new vocational paths. Tutorials range from comprehensive courses to skill snacks. How cute is that? You just want a little something, Jeffrey?
I'm hungry for a skill snack.
Have a skill snack. That's cute, right? Who's the copywriter who wrote that? That was good.
Skills.
Comprehensive courses are longer in length.
A rainbow of learning.
There you go. They cover a subject from beginning to end in their comprehensive courses. They're longer. And they'll allow you to learn an entirely new skill. Skill snacks are short video tutorials that teach quick tips and tricks. Because we all need a quick tip or trick every once in a while. Here's a tip or trick for you. When in Photoshop, if you want to flip the foreground and background colors, press X on your keyboard. Subjects include photography, design, 3D, motion graphics, video, audio.
Was that a little unscripted?
That was a little unscripted. Did you like that?
Bill Wadman, off the chain.
I'm gonna give a skill snack for every time we do an ad for these guys.
All right.
Video, audio, business, web development, and more. You get everything in there. And they've got over 65,000 video tutorials that range from comprehensive courses to skill snacks. Browse their skill feed tutorials by subject, topic categories. If a course tickles your fancy, you can read the tutorial description, learn about the instructor, preview 30 seconds of the video just to get a quick snapshot. And this is really, really good stuff. So go check it out. It's usually a 7-day free trial, but for listeners of On Taking Pictures, they're offering
42 days.
You think 42 days?
No.
Close. 30-day free trial.
Oh,
usually geez. 7. They're giving you 30 days.
That's so pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. To access the tutorials, click on skillfeed.com/OTP. Come on, give me a skill feed.
Wait, now I'm laughing. Wait. All right, I got to serious it up. I got to serious it up right now.
Okay.
Skillfeed.com/OTP.
For a 30-day trial. Thank you very much to Skillfeed for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Go check them out. Learn a new skill today. And we thank them very much for their support. That was fine. Skillfeed.
Right?
Did you come up with that on the fly?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of hip hop. I don't know. What does that even mean?
Oh, God. It's cracking me up.
I've been looking for a new place to live, and I just missed it.
See, I saw this in the show notes. Okay, so this is Jay Mazel's house that we've talked about a billion times.
But it finally sold.
Right, it sold, what was it, $55
million? $55
million. Okay. The thing is that this building is a historic building, so they can't do a lot of stuff to it.
But it's a wreck.
Oh, it's that video does not show it being a wreck. But it is a wreck.
Yeah, the article from the realtor said that there's no heat. I mean, yeah. Jay lived in one little part.
Yeah, you know, like it's top two or three floors. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, infrastructure needs to be. I mean, this place was rough.
I've been on the first, second, third, seventh, and eighth floors, and it was full of stuff too. Oh yeah, it's a whole world inside that building. Yeah. This video does not do it justice, although we will put the video in the show notes. It is a crazy, crazy place that man lived.
I just thought it was interesting that we, you know, there was so much speculation. Will he, won't he? And what was the investment initially?
$125,000. But it was $125,000 when this was a neighborhood no one lived in. It was the 1960s. Right. It was 50 years ago. You know what right. I mean? Like, it's not like it was, he went from $125,000 to $55 million in a decade, you know?
Sure, sure.
The city's in a completely different place now. The neighborhood's a different place. The market's super bubbled, you know? But yeah, it's crazy. It's good for him. I don't think that if any of us bought a place for $500,000 now, it would be worth $55 million in 50 years. You know, like, I think that's just, this is a once in a lifetime, once in a, you know, 100 generations boom, you know?
Right.
But yeah, if you want to go check it out, there's this video has some pictures in it. And I thought I had a thing on, I put up some pictures and On Taking Pictures of when I was there. I thought I did. I will try to find it and put it in the show notes.
You know what is going up?
Here we go. I'll put a link in the show notes. What?
Apple stock.
Yeah, it's always going up. APL. What do we got now? What is it at? 121. Not bad.
121. Yeah. All-time high.
Yeah.
Look at their market cap. 700. They're going to be the world's first trillion-dollar company. You watch.
I know. That terrifies me. No one should have that kind of power.
Except me.
With great power comes great responsibility.
That is true. Hey, so I put this in. I thought this is awesome.
I was actually going to mention this without the article. Like, I was going to say, oh, we forgot one more piece of science of photo news. Yeah. So Neil Armstrong's widow, Carol, was going through the closet and stuff and found a bag with some stuff in it.
A white cloth bag.
Yeah, yeah. Which included both the clips and the straps that held him down while in the LEM, and most importantly, the 16mm film camera that was in the window that filmed the landing. Like, if you've ever seen, like, you know, come down six and picking up some dust now,
right?
Contact light, you know, like all that kind of stuff. Like, where they show where it's like going down to the moon surface, and all of a sudden you start to see it, like, dust come up. that was shot with this camera, and NASA thought it was lost or that they had left it on the moon or left it in the LEM. And
apparently Neil had it.
Neil had it in his closet, which, you know, Conrad and I were talking about this yesterday and wondering if, A, he really forgot about it. That's Conrad thinks that, he forgot that, like, it was in his closet and it just got lost. Right. I seem to think that there was way more to Neil Armstrong, because he was always kind of quiet and reserved and whatever it is. I think there was way more to this dude. And I think the little bit of like a, I've got the 16 millimeter in the closet.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think there was a little bit of a cutesy kind of thing going on there. Cool.
This is the one that recorded the
landing.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. That scene.
But, well, no, that was actually a different camera that was on the outside of the LEM. But this is the one that recorded the landing. I guess it would have recorded him looking, the shot looking straight down on him going down the ladder, yes. But the one where he's bouncing down, actually, there is no recording of, well,
no,
there's,
but it, the one down the ladder, this is the one that shot it.
Well, okay, according the one to down article. The ladder from the window, yes, but there's actually another camera that was on an arm that folded out from the side of the LEM outside. That is the one that got the side shot of him. That was a different. That was a TV camera because it was being broadcast back. So there are two different cameras, but yeah, pretty
I love
cool
this.
Stuff.
The crew members reported to Mission Control that they were bringing, quote, 10 pounds of LM miscellaneous equipment, which Armstrong had earlier described to Michael Collins as just a bunch of trash that we want to take back.
Yep,
LM parts.
Yeah, LEM.
Yeah.
So cool.
Odds and ends.
It's so cool. Ugh. Anyway, so cool stuff. It's all going to the Smithsonian, I think, right? Is that what they decided to do?
Yeah.
Right. So
the bag, also known as a McDivitt purse, was stowed in the lunar module during Apollo 11.
So I've got to go. I've got to go back down to DC to see this stuff while it's on temporary display.
Is it on display right now?
It says it's on temporary display at Air and Space, or NASM, as they say in the business.
Until when's it on display? Until
doesn't say
at a temporary national space. Okay, fine, let's see. Outside the spacecraft, 50 years of extravehicular activity.
Oh, that's where they're sticking it
with parallax,
which is actually kind of interesting because, hey, look, it's Sal Bean. The weird thing about that is that this camera wouldn't have gone outside the spacecraft, but well, we'll put that's neither here nor there. there was an interesting article that I'll put in the link in the show notes, and it's just about like what happened in the photo industry in 2014 and camera sales going up and down or whatever it is, and whatever, camera sales went down by 30% or whatever. I think most of that is probably due to more people just not buying the little cameras, but that doesn't matter. The one interesting part of it that I thought was kind of funny. Now in our industry, there's so much talk about the Fuji stuff and the Olympus stuff. And, you know, all these like mirrorless cameras are taking over the industry and that whole conversation. I feel like it makes it feel as if everyone's buying mirrorless, you know, because Zacharias does. Zacharias? How do you pronounce that guy's name? Arius?
Arius.
Apparently, according to these numbers, mirrorless cameras are just 7% of the entire camera market. They were 5% last year. Isn't that interesting?
But they're going up.
They are going up. They're up by 2 percentage points in the last year.
And when the X Pro 2 comes out, they're going to go up even more.
It's going to be 9%.
That's right. Hey,
but I thought that was interesting.
So, you know, you made a pretty hefty decree, Wadman.
What?
That if the new 50 megapixel Canon came in at under 4K, that you were going to leap. So what's the status there, Buster?
I'm not going to pre-order it. I'm going to wait until they're available. A, because of money, and B, just because I want not the first ones off the line this time. I also want to see what it's like. In fact, I'm in the process of getting one to play with. So hopefully I will get one to play with before they actually come out and I'll be able to see. Smart thing to do would be to pre-order one, because of course they're going to be in really short supply. So even if you don't want one, you could probably buy one for $3,600 and sell it on eBay for $4,500. You know,
that's just smarmy though.
Well, I'm just saying the smart thing to do. It looks pretty good. I mean, the resolution looks great. The sample files look great.
Okay. Here's my question. My question. I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stop you, Bill. Bill, I'm going to stop you.
All right.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
I read your little post.
Yep.
I read your little post. And
your cute little post.
That's right. I've read your I read your little diatribe.
Yeah.
No. One of the things that you wrote about in there was you were very clear about, and I'm going to quote you on this.
Okay.
Is my current setup limiting me from taking the kind of pictures I'd like to take? No way. Would I like 50 megapixel files to work with? Hell yes. Those seem to be at odds with each other. If you're not being limited in a negative way by your current gear, then why
upgrade at all?
Yes, because aren't you just contributing to the machine?
Yes. Well, in my particular case, there are a number of also non-photo reasons. For example, I do need to buy stuff to write off at the end of the year, so there are certain elements of that in there. Just because what I'm currently using, and Patrick Wong or somebody commented in the comments, they're just like, well, you know, are your clients demanding something that you're not giving them? And it's like, the reasons why I want that camera have nothing to do with my clients. If they have anything to do with anything, it's more like my personal work that I would like to do more of. For example, if I want to do more large scale stuff where I make really big prints, like I want to make 40 by 60 inch prints like Crutzen would, my current camera setup would have a hard time making prints that looked good that big. Would I like more pixels? Yeah. Do I need more pixels? No. But you know, if as long as I don't want to print that big, but if I do want to print that big, I need more pixels. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of what I'm doing right now. I my gear works perfectly fine. If I want to do something that requires more pixels, well, then I need more pixels. You see what I'm saying? It's a two-step thing, you know. I tend not to do things that require that sort of large format kind of thing because I don't have the tool to do a more high-res large format kind of thing. But if I did have the tool, then maybe I would do more of that stuff and maybe that would open a whole new thing for me. I don't know. You know what I mean?
You know what I like? You know what I want? I want that new Broncolor Cirrus lighting system.
I was looking at those this morning.
They're sexy.
They're sexy.
For those of you listening, Carl Taylor, friend of the show and a super swell guy, he's got a video up doing a portrait shoot with these, and they're cool as hell, and you can control them with your iPad. They set up a Wi-Fi connection.
Are they are they battery built in? How are they powered?
That I don't know, actually.
Yeah. I mean they're Broncolor, cheap.
I think they would plug into like one of the move packs that he uses.
Yeah, okay. So
I
then,
don't know.
Yeah,
Carl, right. Chime in.
They're $1,500 a light for 800 watt seconds.
But Carl's giving a set away.
Well, then I got to go enter that contest. Am I allowed to, or because I'm friends with Carl, I'm not allowed to?
I don't know. I'm hoping that, you know, they randomly draw my name, Carl.
Yeah. Hint, hint. Hint, hint. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
There's a crisp C-note in it for you, yeah. Taylor.
They look pretty cool. Yeah, I was actually looking at those right before the show started because I saw a link to his stuff. I was going to go check them out.
I mean, they're about a billion times more than I would ever need or want, but they're super cool.
I will tell you, I've been using that one of those Einsteins a lot lately.
Yeah, yeah.
God, it's for $500. It's unbelievable how
good
it is.
That's what I have heard, that they're pretty cool.
One other little tech thing, the Affinity photo app. Who sent this in? Somebody put it up on the group.
Somebody put it, Wayne Hatfield put it up on the group. I got an email about it from Patrick who said, okay. Hey, go check this out.
So this is what?
This is, on spending an hour or so with it. This is, in my opinion, the first kind of serious contender for Photoshop.
Yeah. Mac only though. I mean, it ticks all of the boxes that we want things to tick.
Raw file, 16-bit correction, CMYK, adjustment layers. That's a big one.
Yeah, that's a requirement for somebody like me.
Looks like it's using Core Image, so it's going to be fast for processing.
Yep.
Pretty sexy.
I was actually, I installed the beta, and I've actually set it up in Lightroom so I can export to it. And I'm actually going to give it a shot to edit some stuff later today. So I will let you know next week what I think.
Yeah. But it is in beta. So, you know, expect some rough edges and, you know, it's not feature complete.
Right. But it feels much closer to the tool that we need than Pixelmator was when I tried it.
I will agree with you there. Yep. And the price tag. Come on.
I think they were saying
$50.
I read somewhere $50. And which includes 2 years of upgrades.
2 years of upgrades for $50.
I mean, I hope that they are successful in as much as it makes Adobe not stand still. Not that Adobe's really been standing still lately. They've actually been adding lots of good stuff too.
Sure. But it would be nice to have some actual competition.
Yeah. And it would be nice to have a tool that costs $50 that we could actually recommend that people could use to do stuff. You know,
right.
The question, you know, it's a really weird thing that a lot of times lately, depending on what kind of work that I'm doing, and I'm sure a lot of listeners of our show can get 90% of the way they need to go or 100% of the way they need to go, even within Aperture or Lightroom or something, you know.
I would agree with that. Sure.
By the way, did you also see that the Apple Photo app is in beta if you're on
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how that thing is too, you know. But it seems like Lightroom really doesn't have any competition right now.
Capture One. A lot of pros still
use
Capture One.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
You know, I wouldn't say it's an enthusiast tool, right. But a lot of, especially medium format shooters, a lot of those guys are using Capture One.
People swear by it. You know, every time I've tried it, it's good, but it's like, okay, I'm changing over to gain what? You know, some people swear by the raw conversions and, you know, but some people swear by the raw conversions of Photo Mechanic or whatever the heck it is too.
Right.
So everyone's got their thing. And of course, apparently motion picture film is going to be here forever.
A while anyway. Yeah.
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 I want to, you know what, the only thing that I don't like about, so basically the studios, movie studios and Kodak have struck a deal to buy X amount of movie film so that people like Quentin Tarantino and Christopher Nolan can still make movies with film.
Correct.
Although in this article and in the press releases and everything I've looked at, nowhere does it have any numbers in it. You know what I mean? Like they're buying X amount of film. You know what I mean? Like how much film are you buying? Are you buying enough for 6 months? Cause that's not going to do it. You know, I would love to see, more of that in there. It does say in here, film sales have declined by 96% over the last decade. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know,
good for Christopher Nolan.
If it makes, if film makes money in cinema and if movies shot on film, I guess is better, makes money on, you know, in cinema, then the likelihood of it being around longer is probably greater.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting. I mean,
they list some pretty big movies, man. Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, Interstellar,
the new
Fox
Star Wars.
Yeah. Batman versus Superman.
The interesting thing, even in New York, though, you can go. It used to be that there were areas in Chelsea where you could go get E6 film. So basically a slide film, right? Like Velvia or Provia or whatever it is. You could get that stuff developed in an hour, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like it used to be, like it was turnaround, like while you guys were eating lunch, the film was getting developed so you could stick it on a table and look at it after lunch. Nowadays it's minimum of 4 to 6 hours, a lot of times overnight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that in the photo industry, even if there are people shooting film still, commercial photographers are not shooting film. Or rather, even if they want to shoot film, the industry is not supporting them in the way that it used to. You know what I mean? Like the services aren't there to do it.
Now, I wonder, also no mention, is this 35 millimeter film? Is this 70 millimeter film?
My guess is it would probably be 35, right? But yeah. Hey, did you know, I never watched The Master. I keep meaning to watch it. But that was shot in 70 millimeter film. And there was an interview with, what's his name? Anderson. Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Where he was like, I want to do something different for this movie. And like, and apparently a cinematographer's like, how about we use this? And like rolled out a 70 millimeter camera. And he was like, yes. And apparently the producers were like, no. Because they realized how much it would cost to do it, right. You know. But it was just.
Have you ever shot motion picture film, 35 millimeter motion picture film through your camera?
No. Oh, through my camera? Nope. Yeah. That used to be a big thing that people did because it was, you could get it cheap, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've never done it. I've never rolled my own black and white either. Like I wasn't into that stuff at the time when that was like in the '80s and nineties, you know, you go buy a 100-foot roll or whatever.
My friend
it is
Mark and I, yeah, we would bulk load our own film canisters.
Yeah. Like I never did that.
It was a lot less expensive.
Yeah. Right. But again, that was probably when the chemicals and stuff were less expensive too. Like the little place down the hill from me. Her chemical prices have doubled in the past few years and she has half the clientele, you know? Mm-hmm, so it's like, it's a tough, it's not a great trajectory regardless of whether or not Christopher Nolan is shooting Batman 17 in film, you know?
Right.
But interesting. All right. So we're doing a crit wall.
You know what? Do we have time or
we're at 1 hour right now. It's up to you.
Yeah, we can do it. I just Jeremy Bryant put a couple photos in. I wanted to kind of just get your thoughts and kind of talk about them for a little bit.
Okay.
A couple in particular.
Let me pull them up. So we have
The
one
Lone
picture
Shooter.
Called, right. And Nightcrawling. Okay. Oh,
so,
all right. So what do you got?
Lone Shooter. What do you think? I love the concept of this, but the fact that nothing is really in focus doesn't work for me.
Okay. I can see that.
Also, we talked about it a little bit. I think you had a great suggestion of cropping up a little bit. So we get more of the impression that he's on a cliff.
Yeah. Just a little bit on the bottom. You could also, change that. Like if you would get less of the city, but if you went and took the camera down a couple feet, you could pan up a little bit. So it really, you know, that would add to sort of feeling of height. You'd get a little bit less of the city, but it might be a slightly more interesting perspective.
Yeah. Emphasizes a little more drama on him.
Yeah. But I think you're right. Like, yeah, if the city was really sharp behind him, it feels like maybe he shot this handheld when, didn't have a, let's see how fast.
That guy there in the shot had his tripod.
Right. I'm saying that. Yeah, I know. Sometimes at night, if it was as dark as I'd imagine it probably was when he was shooting this picture, it could be that he basically didn't realize that the background was not perfectly sharp because it was just really low light and you couldn't see the focus. Mm-hmm. You know, that can happen too. But yeah, it's a.
I love the concept of it. I would take another stab at it. This might be film.
Because it says camera make Noritsu Koki, which is a film scanner, isn't it? Yeah, this might be film. Yeah. I think it's a cool picture though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too.
I wouldn't mind seeing it, instead of portrait, have it be landscape and have him like in the left-hand corner, make that look like a cliff and then having just city going out to the right. Now, I don't know what was to the right here, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So, these are in the group. You can go check them out if you go to the crit wall section. That one. And then what was the other one? The Nightcrawling.
I like this one.
Yeah, I do like that one too.
There are a couple things. I like the green against the red on the right side of it.
Yeah,
and then I like the kind of warmth from the warm kind of pool of light that the sodium vapor light puts actually onto the asphalt on the other side.
Yeah, I would have tried even bumping up the saturation even a little more,
and just really punch it out.
Yeah, and then you know like Jay Mazel style, and then maybe even cropping it a bit to get rid of a little of the top,
little of the sky.
Yeah. Like it could be cool if this was a square photo and this was the bottom two thirds and there was another third of just empty sky up top where it was lots of negative space.
Right.
And then this stuff down the bottom, But like as it is, it feels
so
like
either one way or the other. Either kind of less 16 of, by 9 it or square it up and give more of the sky.
Yeah, you agree or do you understand what I'm trying
I think,
to get at?
Yeah, I think that's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Or even up the contrast more so that it just becomes black everywhere else, you know.
Mhm. Mm-hmm. I like that little bit of ambient light behind the tree line though, I got to tell you.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Maybe even pull
on
that
the left
out.
Side.
Well, that's
yeah,
the thing. If you had this from a slightly different angle, like if you moved down the bridge a little bit towards the red side,
mm-hmm.
and turned, and maybe there's trees all left out of frame. You know what I mean? That could have been a high line, like a high background where it was like just the sky behind the trees, like you're saying. Like extend that out further to the left. It's a pretty cool shot, though.
Yeah, it's a good shot.
You like long exposure stuff like that, don't you?
I do like the long exposure. I've never done any of it because I didn't have a tripod, and I just bought a new tripod. So
that's easy enough.
So now I'm ready to go.
You know, stuff like this with the lights streaming and waterfalls, you know, with neutral density filters, you know, that whole
right.
look.
Right.
It's tricky to come up with. It's easy to be impressive. It's tricky to come up with something that's interesting.
That yes.
Sense. It's easy to be impressive to somebody who doesn't know how to do it. But then once you know how to do it, it's kind of like, all right, now you got the skill. What are you going to do with it? I think this is a good example of this. But there's something about it that could be really cool. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wish the trees went all the way across and you could see a little bit of like, it's weird. The sky ends up being kind of green the way that it gets shifted, huh?
Yeah, there's a guy called Matt Granz. I think that's his name.
You mean Matt Black?
Yeah, Matt Black. that did a shot of the Bixby Bridge.
Okay.
Light trails. And it's really great because you've got these trails going all, you know, down the bridge, but you can still see the sea and the coastline beyond it. I'll see if I can find it.
Okay.
Something, let's see, I think it's Matt Granz.
We will find it.
But yeah, so thank you very much for you know, putting this up in there, yeah. Jeremy.
Sorry, I hope we weren't too harsh. Were we too harsh?
No, I don't think so, because we liked them, and it's good stuff, you know?
So if you guys want to get involved and do a little bit more of this stuff, put your stuff up in the crit wall, and maybe we'll take a look at it every couple weeks. Is that the plan?
Yes. Here's this shot. Where are you? Bill Wadman.
Boom.
There you go.
Okay. I will take a look. Flickr. Oh, yeah, that's nice. It's funny because that way, the way he did it, it's almost as if the road is just lit up by the light that has gone by.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
All right, so the rest of the group. You guys had some fun with Square and put up some really great stuff.
I have to say Fieldings was pretty good. The bottle.
Yeah.
That was good.
Lots of really good stuff. Jason, who I have to mention Jason. Jason Fosera.
Yep.
Up in Portland. Has taken it upon himself to do a book of his photographs of the assignments.
Oh, I saw that. That was pretty cool.
It's super, super cool. So, Jason, well done you. Really, really cool. Really, really good. Anyway, so Jason's got good stuff in there. Tanya, also really good stuff. I like that shot of the two cars and the long shadows coming diagonally across the frame. That's really cool. So I'm just scanning down. Jim, that's some snow there on those rocks. I like that shot. Wait, is that your hand? Oh no, that's David doing you. That's David doing.
I know. Yeah. I've been,
you know, that's good.
I do like Cam's Campbell's, pictures of him picking up his guitar and going all the way home with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was in Connecticut. He didn't come to New York and say hello.
Well, that's got to tell you something.
Apparently I got to take a shower.
That's right. Vincenzo, new member of the group. Welcome. And very cool. Naples, Italy. You know what's always a good idea?
Napoli.
Going to Naples, Italy.
Sure. As long as Vesuvius isn't erupting.
That's right. Mike Weller, good stuff. Look for the group. Look for the Jason's
like
book.
People like Square.
I like Square.
Square's a great format.
Yeah.
I wish I could like live in Square sometimes. But what are you going to do? So what's for next week?
Wait, who's the other one? Oh, Dan Hawk, another cool one on the streets there in Southeast Portland on Hawthorne. Hey, that's right by a Pizza Shoals. Neat. Cool, Dan. Welcome back. You've been gone for a while.
What's today's,
okay. Today, let's see, where's my thing here? Street scene.
Street scene.
Street scene.
Well, Dan Hawk already did street scene right there.
Well, dear, he's got to go back. He's got to go back and do it again. Yeah, street scene. Street photography, popular. A lot of people do street photography.
I've heard it's big with the kids.
But it, you know, what does that mean to you? Street scene. Is it a scene of a street? Is it asphalt? Is it macro detail of a crosswalk symbol? Is it a zoomed in view? Are you shooting the little walk guy crossing the street with a 400 millimeter lens and that fills the entire screen?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Go deep, people. Don't just shoot from the hip.
Thought that's what street photography was all about.
Well, see, that's the snake oil they've been selling you.
Or you have to be like Cartier-Bresson and just sit there and wait for a little kid to run by.
You can do that too. Yeah. Sometimes just enjoy the moment. All right. Photographer of the week. This is, I didn't know this, Bill, but yep. this is one of your, like this guy has taken one of your most iconic shots of all time. I didn't know that.
He has. Yeah.
We're talking about Neil Leifer.
Yeah, the Neil Leifer's photograph of Ollie and Williams overhead, it's called, where it's a square image over the top of a square boxing ring.
with
Williams laying down, Ollie in triumph, and it's just tables of, you know, mostly like sort of white 1960s reporters
around
the edges.
It's such a great shot.
It's one of the better photographs ever. Like, this is an example of a photograph that you can honestly say is as good as any painting. You know what I mean? Like, this is at that level. Like, this is the best of what photography.
If I could afford it.
Right. This is what the best of what photography can do. It's great. It was from the 1966 World Heavyweight Title fight at the Astrodome. And is a great example. Now, Leifer took all kinds of famous sports pictures of, you know, Ali and
The other iconic shot of Ali in Liston where he's kind of, you know, slapping his own chest in triumph, like, get up, you know?
Yeah. My favorite part of that though is the weird little white guy in the background with the glasses, like between his legs. See, if this was digital, you would have either removed that guy or darkened him down.
Yeah. This is a great shot.
It's so cool. And, you know, and he shot tons of famous football pictures of Vince Lombardi and, you know, like all of these shots that are sort of the classics of a lot. I feel like a lot of the historical drama and what's the word I'm looking for? Not melancholy. What's the word I'm looking for? Way people feel about sports, I think a lot of it comes from photos like these.
Sure.
You know,
well, like, I mean, look at the
football
show
in the '60s. It was so raw and whatever. It's like, it's Leifer's photos that you're remembering.
His work is very cinematic.
Yeah.
Regardless of the subject matter, it's very cinematic.
And somewhat sentimental in time. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Sure. The parade of tall ships in New York Harbor there. That's beautiful. Yeah.
It's amazing stuff. And one of the all-time greats. I'm surprised we never did him. Guess we just never got around to it. I feel like he is an example of a sports photographer who transcends sports photography.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I don't think that's true of a lot of sports photographers.
He's not, and I don't mean this offensively at all, but he's not simply documenting sport.
Right. Yep.
You're right. There is something that the shot of Koji at Mount Fuji, you know, the gymnast, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, where's that one? There it is. Yeah, that's good stuff. And a lot of this stuff, I mean, you also have to remember he was shooting this stuff in the days of film where it was much more difficult to put this stuff together, you know?
Right, right.
Great, great stuff. We're going to put it, we'll put a bunch of links in the show notes. And there's a video here, which I didn't get to watch. What is the video here? I'll put in the link in the show
notes.
It's
a talk that he did.
For the Moody College of Communication. Okay.
Yeah, and if you there are other people in it, but you fast forward to about the 7 minute mark, and that's where he starts.
Okay, we'll put a link in the show notes. It's I like people like him who are doing something different. You know what I mean? Like trying to really change stuff. Oh, like
and
a cute
man, ass. there are a lot of pictures on his site. And they're just like one after another. It's just like, oh, great. Oh, great.
Yeah. This is, by the way, he, for such a classic guy, actually has a website that's halfway decent where a lot of these guys don't.
Yeah. It's really well done.
Yeah. The part of the things that bothered me a lot of times, like he's a good example of, will there ever be photographers like this from the next generation because of the way the business has changed, you know? Sort of our conversation from the other week. Where,
oh,
like,
sure.
You're
sure.
Not getting sent around to do assignments all over the place. It's like, well, yeah. It's
well, and it's much more difficult. I mean, like a journalist, you know, these guys had a visual point of view, and their visual point of view was represented in a variety of different sports all around the country. And to your point, you're not going to have that much more anymore because you're going to have the guy in Florida shooting games in Florida.
Yep.
The guy in Ohio shooting games in Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah. Not shooting the Olympics and then going here for this boxing match in Mozambique and then going to whatever it is. Yeah.
Look at this shot of Namath. Classic shot of Joe Namath.
Yeah. I'm looking at the ones of, like the pictures right now of, there's a shot of Ed Koch in front of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
Which with the World Trade Centers in the background from 1980. And it's interesting because in some ways, this is sort of presaging the picture of Giuliani up at the top that Heisler took up at the mm-hmm, top of the mm-hmm, building with mm-hmm. the city behind him. It's like you could see how this led to the other one, you know, it's a progression of stuff throughout history. Anyway, Neil Leifer, great choice. Good choice. Got anything else?
No, I'm just going through. I'm not a huge sports person, but this takes me back because sports photography was one of the reasons I got into photography in the beginning.
I don't know what you're talking about. Sports ball is really impressive and pictures are great though.
Yeah, they are. I wonder what his prints run. Are they editioned?
Well, you can contact sales@neilleifer.com and find out.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're expensive, but I'm sure that they are within reason. Yeah, that's a great photo. All right. Anything else before we wrap up?
Have we forgotten anything?
No, we covered a lot.
I don't know. Go look around, go get inspired, go find cool stuff to paint or write about or take pictures or write a song about.
A sonnet.
Mm-hmm.
What's a form of a sonnet?
I don't know.
Yeah. I have to look that up. All right. For next week, I'll look up the form of a sonnet.
There you go. Podcast at ontakingpictures.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 347-687-9411.
We love getting the voicemails.
We do love getting the voicemails. Bill tweets at Bill Wadman. I tweet at Jeffrey Sidoris. And go take the survey. Go try Skillfeed for a month. Jeez, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go check that out.
I know, we're gonna have to go look at it. And we'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something. This way, say what you want to
say, though I know your words will lay me out. So I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long. It's clear to me the way you see me is wrong. Eyes this way. Say what you wanna say, I know what you will say.